Our next session is Unique Issues of the West, Tribal Land Issues, and Oklahoma. For this panel, we have Carrie Hoffhines. She is a shareholder, director in Crow and Dunleavy's Oklahoma City office, and a member of the firms of Real Estate, Wind, and Renewable Energy and Banking and Financial Institutions Practice Groups. Her practice incorporates a broad range of commercial real estate transactions, including acquisitions and sales, secured financing, commercial leasing, land use, construction and development, as well as various other aspects of real estate and banking law. We also have Sarah Robidoux Lawson, who is with Schwabe. Sarah works with tribal governments and entities to achieve self-governance and economic development goals while protecting tribal resources and sovereignty. Before joining Schwabe, she worked with tribal government for more than 10 years, advising tribal departments and councils on various matters, including contracts, real estate development, and legislation. Please join me in welcoming them both.
Thank you. We will get started. We're going to talk to you guys today about unique issues of the West and, frankly, the entire United States, tribal land issues, and specifically we're going to be talking about Oklahoma, but we will be talking about some general federal tribal issues as well.
Right. So I'll skip through our bios since you just heard an intro. So my background is in federal Indian law and tribal law. When I say federal Indian law, that's really just sort of specializing in the federal statutes and cases that deal with tribes. Title 25 of the U.S. Code just simply says Indians. And so there are a lot of general principles of federal Indian law that apply across the board to almost all tribes, but what everyone who practices Indian law knows is that there are some places that are just different. And Oklahoma is one of those. So it's like Alaska, Oklahoma, some of the pueblos in New Mexico are just a little bit different. So I'm going to be speaking more to the broad overview federal Indian law types of points. And then my colleague up here, Carrie, who is a real estate attorney in Oklahoma, is going to speak more to the Oklahoma specific issues. So you can't really talk about Indian land without talking about the history of Indian land. And, you know, pre-contact tribes were sovereign governments that existed. Tribal sovereignty predates contact. It exists from, quote, time immemorial is what we generally say. Tribal sovereignty is not limited by the U.S. Constitution. It's inherent to tribes, and it's not granted by Congress. But we always say that Congress has plenary power to limit or restrict the limits of tribal sovereignty. It includes all governmental powers, including full plenary power over tribal members. So starting in 1790, Congress passed the Indian Non-Intercourse Acts. So prior to the United States Constitution, every state basically was negotiating on its own with the Indian tribes in their area. That power was essentially given to the federal government in the U.S. Constitution in the Commerce Clause that says only Congress shall have dealings with foreign nations as well as with Indian tribes. And starting in 1790, Congress passed a series of laws that restricted land transfers from Indian tribes, saying that those transfers had to have the approval of the federal government. This was in part because of what the feds considered to be bad actors. Certain states, like New York, who had continued to make contracts and treaties with tribes over land to secure more land to the state, even though that power had essentially been given to the federal government in the Constitution. And this sort of lined us up for what is generally considered the first Indian law case that went to the U.S. Supreme Court, which was Johnson v. McIntosh.
So in 1823, can you guys hear me? In 1823, the Supreme Court heard the Johnson v. McIntosh case. In that case, the plaintiffs claimed a fee title to the property after purchasing the property from the Piankashaw Indians. The chief of the tribe conveyed the land by deed to Johnson. And then later, Congress conveyed 11,000 acres of land, which contained that subject property, to another party. Johnson's heirs sued, and the case was appealed to the Supreme Court. The court found that land transfers from Native Americans to private individuals are void.